Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank? Having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworksIreland.ie/movetogas.
Jonathan De Burka Butler joins us once again to bring us some stories from around the world. Jonathan, good afternoon.
Sean, how are you getting?
Right, Gabon. We're going to first, and it's an amnesty, or is it the opposite of
well,
that?
They're thinking of it. Yeah. Since elections last year, which were won very narrowly and controversially by the current president Ali Bongo Ondimba, there has been quite a bit of tension between him and the main opposition leader, a man by the name of Jean Ping. Now, Mr. Ping has on several occasions called his supporters out to protest against Mr. Ali Bongo, and in fact there was a travel ban put on Jean Ping earlier this month for about a week and his supporters. And anyway, in the meantime, as these protests have been happening, 800 people have been arrested, 400 of them were released earlier this year, and he is now, that is, the president is contemplating releasing another 400. Now, he says he's going to put a sort of a government committee together and they're going to mull this over, I suppose, to make it look kind of official. But ultimately, it's whether he decides, it'll be up to him whether whether they're released or not.
Yeah. And were these people charged with anything?
No, they haven't been charged with anything. And that's the thing, they've just been arrested. They haven't been put on trial and they've just been detained there for the last number of months. Now, there's quite a bit of pressure that's been brought to bear on him from, among other organisations, the European Union. So, I mean, the European Parliament actually released an official statement basically asking Gabon to stop harassing and intimidating political opponents. So he might be bowing to that pressure somewhat.
Though I suppose from his point of view, it could be seen as a goodwill gesture, or you're letting out 400 people who are really, really annoyed with you.
Yeah.
Which might make his tenure even more difficult.
Yeah, but I mean, we know from, you know, so many leaders in this part of the world that they'll always take the photo opportunity of you know, making themselves look like the benevolent
statesman.
Leader.
Yes,
you know, and being kind and generous. But I just think in this case, Jean Ping, who's the main opposition leader, is too savvy an operator. I mean, he was head of African Union, and he's quite a savvy operator. So, as the opposition leader, he'll probably try and take advantage of it as well. So we'll see how it goes.
Right, Brazil. We're going to go to next, and this is a story to do with a judge and gay conversion.
Yes, this is a man by the name of Valdemir de Carvalho, a federal judge who's based in the capital, Brasilia. And a couple of years ago, 1999, the Federal Council of Psychology in Brazil, they banned the classification of homosexuality as a disease, and therefore they banned their members of their federation from treating it as a disease. Okay, so gay conversion therapy was out as such. But this didn't stop a woman by the name of Rosangelina Justino, who very publicly declared homosexuality a disease. It didn't stop her from carrying on this conversion therapy. Okay, as most people probably know, this is the idea that you can be, you know,
degayed. Yeah.
I couldn't have put it better myself. Yeah, indeed. And it would appear that in this case, she had her license revoked because she was using this practice, and she appealed or brought a case, at least to this federal judge, and the judge has agreed with her. And it has caused major upset amongst many people in Brazil. It was a big story. Now, it's going to be appealed. The Federal Council of Psychology said that it opens up the dangerous possibility of the use of sexual reversion therapies, and they have promised to fight it in court. Now, how they're going to do it, I don't know exactly, but you know, they're planning some sort of action.
Now, and this is not unconnected with a growing numbers of evangelical Christians in the country.
Yeah, that's what they say. That's what a lot of commentators say, that it's connected to that. And there seems to be a bit of a conservative pushback at the moment. I was reading another story where last week a museum in Porto Alegre, called Santander Cultural, which is actually backed by the bank of the same name, they stopped an exhibition which was based on, it was a queer museum that had opened in Porto Alegre. And because they were coming under such pressure from protests from right-wing groups, one in particular, they stopped this exhibition early, a month early. So I thought it was interesting because it was, again, a commercial organisation that was, you know, sort of bowing to pressure from right-wing organisations. And they stopped it.
Very interesting. Okay, we're going to go to Australia. Now, I suppose in a similar vein, similar themes covered here, this was a fundraiser in schools where they got everybody to wear dresses for the day.
Yeah. So
Boys and girls.
Boys and girls. Doing an address was the campaign. It was in Craigburn Primary School in South Australia. Their aim was $900. They wanted to raise $900 to help girls in Africa to get an education. They have now got to over $200,000, mainly because a senator by the name of Corey Bernardi, who's a conservative senator there, suggested that this initiative was absurd and it was gender morphing. And that was the whole theme around it, effectively. Lots of people, including, again, celebrities, came out and started donating thousands of dollars to this particular campaign, which, again, only aimed for $900. And it drew quite a bit of attention. Now, there's a lot going on in Australia at the moment. They have their own marriage referendum at the moment, which is actually happening right now. They're doing it by a postal vote, and it's not going to be declared until November the 15th. So that's kind of feeding into the debate. And indeed, this senator, when he was asked about the fact that he had given a boost to this particular campaign, he said, well, I'm happy that the money's not going to the marriage referendum campaign. So anyway, he tried to pass it off as being a good thing, but I don't think it quite worked in his favour.
Yeah. Right, you did him a huge favour.
Yeah,
right, Pakistan next. A bit of tension between Pakistan and Switzerland over what?
Yeah, so Balochistan is the largest region of Pakistan, and there are some people in that part of the world. It's in the southwest of the country. There's lots of people in that part of the world who basically want to separate from Islamabad and from Pakistan, obviously. And it's government in exile, shall we say, represented by the Baloch Republican Party, are based in Geneva. Okay, so it was in Geneva that they started a poster campaign calling for the separation of Balochistan. It went to the extent where they actually were plastering posters on the sides of buses. So it was very public. It wasn't just a small thing in some underground pubs that they were doing this, you know, this kind of campaign. So the Pakistani authorities got wind of this. They summoned the Swiss ambassador and had a chat with them. We don't know what happened with the conversation, but it looks like those posters aren't going to be taken down anytime soon. But it's just a slap on the wrist. For their part, the Baloch Republican Party, who, as I said, are in exile in Switzerland, think it's great because they say that Pakistani government had drawn attention to an issue that not a lot of people know about. And so they've benefited from it.
Yes. Right, okay. Again, two countries that are having a few tensions between Ukraine and Romania. Now, the Romanian president is not going to be travelling to Ukraine now.
Yes, this is Klaus Iohannis. He's decided that he had been invited to the Ukraine. He was going to visit a region there called Bukinova. And I think there are about 400,000 ethnic Romanians living in Ukraine. Okay. And he decided he was not going to go. And this is based around a new law that was just signed, in fact, today by the Ukrainian president there, Petro Poroshenko, which will mean that in primary schools past a certain age, Ukrainian will be the first language that's used in every school there. Now, you might say, so what? But on the peripheries of the countries, on the areas that border the other countries around the Ukraine, there's Hungarians, Russians, obviously, Romanians, Polish, all sorts of different ethnic groups. And they all use those languages as their prime language in primary school. This law will stop that, or at least up to a certain degree. So what the Ukrainian government are now doing is they're saying that beyond the fourth grade, you have to use Ukrainian as the first language, but not in two subjects. So EU languages, it's quite exact in the way that it's put. EU languages are going to be allowed within these schools, but only in two subjects.
Okay.
Okay. Now, that, of course, explicitly means that Russian
can't
is not going
used.
To be included,
yes.
Which, of course, the Russians are not very happy about. But the Romanians, for their side, or at least the Romanian president for his part, has decided he's not going to visit because he doesn't support this, and that's how it is.
Yeah, okay. Which just shows how, you know, so many of these countries are so mixed up in terms of ethnic groups living in each other's countries.
Absolutely.
Right, France we're going to go to next. So, could this be political correctness gone mad, Jonathan? An MP wants to ban wolf whistling.
Well, yeah, this is Marlena Schiappa, who's the Secretary of State in charge of equality. And she's come up with an idea, and it's been backed by Macron, to stop wolf whistling in public. And this is part of proposals to bring in anti-sexual harassment measures. Now, it's also going to include men following women down the street and repeatedly asking them for their phone numbers and that kind of thing. She did say that consensual flirting between adults will be okay.
That's good to know.
But it's been pointed out to her that, you know, where are the lines drawn? How are we going
to
prove these things?
Define,
you know, it's very difficult to define. So that's what they're going to discuss. We'll see if it comes in. Certainly, I don't know, wolf whistling, if I was walking down the street and I had to put up with it every day, I'd probably get a bit sick of it after a while.
Absolutely.
I should say it happens all the time, of course. Yeah. But
if it was introduced as a law, what would be the potential penalties for that?
Well, the woman who's trying to bring it in, Marlena Schiappa, has said that, you know, a €20 fine would be a little bit humiliating. But she says €5,000 might be more of a deterrent.
It would.
It certainly would.
That's for sure. Right, we're going to go to Denmark. Denmark and or Europe as well. And this is a story concerning babies from Sri Lanka.
Yes, so it's a Dutch documentary that has revealed that Sri Lankan children during the 1980s, as many as 11,000 Sri Lankan babies, may have been brought from the country into Europe illegally, adopted illegally as such. Now, it's bizarre, and the more you go into it, I actually got in touch with them, the documentary makers, via email to see if they knew if any had actually ended up in Ireland. They said they have no knowledge of it yet, but we know that there are children from Denmark, Sweden, Germany and the UK. 4,000 of that 11,000 have ended up in the Netherlands. And these are children that were basically, for want of a better way of putting it, being produced in factories, okay, more baby-making factories, they're being called, all right, in Sri Lanka. So effectively, women were being kept there, imprisoned, and were being made to have these babies for adoption, okay? There were other cases where women were having babies in hospitals, and they were being stolen. Now, the Sri Lankan government, because of this, are actually launching an investigation into this. It's been revealed in the last few days. But it's I think it's potentially a massive story.
Yeah.
And obviously quite shocking.
And if this all happened, when did it stop? The process stop? Is it clear?
Okay. So we know that there was a case in 1987 where one of these factories, as I said, for want of a better way of putting it, was discovered, and there was 20 infants found and 22 women, as far as I know. So after that and the bad publicity, the numbers of babies coming from Sri Lanka really dropped off. We don't know when it stopped as such. That still has to be investigated. But it appears that the number certainly declined quite drastically after that event in 1987. But up until then, it was happening a lot.
So there's probably thousands of people who would be EU citizens, but who would be adults now.
Yeah.
Who perhaps don't know how they came to be. So
indeed.
To speak.
Yeah. And the Sri Lankan government have said that they're setting up a DNA database. Where, you know, mothers who suspect that their children are in Europe can go, and they'll be able to sort of cross reference and find each other, hopefully.
Right, finally, Jamaica we're going to now. And this woman was being deported from Canada. Is that the situation?
She was being deported from Jamaica. Okay, back to Canada. So
Had she done in Jamaica that was so terrible?
Yeah, she was in prison for 16 months on drug charges.
Right.
Okay. So presumably they would keep an eye on her for, you know, similar sort of crimes. But anyway, as she was being deported, she was a Canadian citizen. As she was being deported from this facility in Portmore in Jamaica. Somewhere along the line, she picked up some more drugs because they were found on her when she got into Canada, and an investigation has now been launched. Well, so either she's very, very cunning, or somewhere along the line, somebody was chancing their arm and trying to get drugs back into Canada.
Stick with what you know. Might have been. Or maybe they just never searched her bag when they arrested her in the first place and she just went back to Canada with the same bag. Right, what kind of things will we be looking out for over the next week or so?
Okay, so there's elections in Aruba on the 30th of September, so we'll await the results of that with bated breath. On the 28th of September, it's the 66th anniversary of South Korea recovering Seoul from North Korea during the Korean War. Now, I imagine that the celebrations will be somewhat low-key in Seoul, but perhaps we might see a few more launches from Rocket Man, as he's now being called by a certain someone, around about that date. And then on the same day, Putin and Erdogan are going to, that is Vladimir Putin, obviously, and Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Turkish president, are going to meet in Ankara, probably to discuss things in Syria.
Jonathan, thanks a million for coming into us today. Jonathan DeBerke, Butler there.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank? Having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworksIreland.ie/movetogas.